Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, January the 10th, 2020. And the first article has the headline, Beat the Winter Blues, Dateline Danville. Winter can be a depressing time for those with a green thumb. That's partly why the Master Gardeners are about to host a series of three classes that will be free and open to the public. Nobody wants to sit inside during the summer and talk about gardening, said Jenny Hanrahan, a horticulture program coordinator at the University of Illinois Extension. They want to be outside and doing it. For those interested in growing their own food, the gardening group will first offer growing fruit, apples, to pawpaws at 6 p.m. Tuesday, February 18th. Hosted at the Danville Public Library, this class will feature a panel of master gardeners who will present information and answer questions on the different varieties of fruit that can be grown in Vermilion County, which is predominantly in growing zone 5B. The panel will discuss popular choices like apples, pears, plums, and peaches, as well as smaller fruits like blueberries, raspberries, and grapes. Exotic crops like gooseberries, currants, ground cherries, and pawpaws will also be discussed. One of the first signs of the coming spring is when seed starting kits hit store shelves. So the Master Gardeners plan to host a class at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, March 17th on this very subject. This class will be conducted at International Greenhouse Supply, 70 East Gate Road. They put it up on the website Wednesday, and a half hour later, somebody signed up, Hanrahan said of the popularity of the class. If you're going to start seeds, you're going to want to start them in February and March, depending on the variety. We'll have a chart telling you when is a good time to start those seeds, and the speakers will talk about things like heating mats and keeping the soil warm. Master Gardeners Jerry Trosper, Audrey Rowe, and Sharon Beninato will discuss their experiences with starting plants from seed and also point out the importance of lighting, potting mix, moisture, and disease prevention. A third class set for 6 p.m. and also at the library will be the popular What's New in Garden Centers. Every year, new color combinations and new varieties of plants hit the store shelves, and the Master Gardeners are ready to discuss what to look forward to. Everybody's itching to get out to the garden centers and start buying annuals and perennials, she said. People will literally come in and will be scribbling on paper the whole time the person's talking about what varieties to look for. For instance, a new variety might be more resistant to powdery mildew, and if that's been a problem, a gardener might want to pick some of those up. And for those looking to become master gardeners themselves, there are still spots open to take that class as well, Hanrahan said. Classes begin in a few weeks, beginning on Tuesdays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. For information on any of these classes, call Hanrahan at 217-442-8615 or visit go.illinois.edu/apply-vermilion. The last two words are typed as one word. Registration for any of these classes is important to know how many handouts to create. And the next article has the headline, Officials take a look at roads. Danville, one of the main winter projects, the City of Danville's Engineering Division is starting a rating system for local streets. Danville City Engineer Sam Cole talked at a Danville Area Transportation Study Policy Committee meeting Thursday at City Hall about the discussion starting internally with city staff and said the project might require hiring someone to help with the process. Cole first brought up the dialogue starting at a November DATS Technical Committee meeting. He said they're working toward asset management, such as taking inventory of the square footage of streets and sidewalks and ranking them for improvements in the city. The DATS Policy Committee Thursday also made amendments to its transportation improvement program, including regarding the Denmark Road project and Northwest Pump Station project being moved back to fiscal year 2021. Addition of a $450,000 project for Vermilion County of pavement replacement on Batestown Road from 500 feet southwest of US 150 to US 150 and other project amendments for the Illinois Department of Transportation and the Vermilion County Conservation District. The Conservation District Amendment only changed the Kickapoo Rail Trail project from Gray Siding Road to the Vermilion County Fairgrounds from advanced construction to current construction. The committee also discussed its long-range transportation program and adopted the Illinois Department of Transportation's performance measure safety targets. According to the resolution adopting the safety targets, the Daniel Area Transportation Study both desires and is required by the Federal Highway Administration to set safety performance management measures in support of the Highway Safety Improvement Program. IDOT has adopted HSIP targets for 5 safety performance measures in compliance with FHWA requirements, and DATS supports those targets, which amount to a 2% reduction in 5 accident categories. As a result, the policy committee accepted and adopted IDOT's 2020 core safety measure targets. According to the FHWA, states are required to set annual safety performance targets in the HSIP report. The annual measures states set targets for include rate of fatalities per 100 vehicle miles traveled, number of serious injuries in a motor vehicle crash during a calendar year, rate of serious injuries per 100 million vehicle miles traveled, number of non-motorized fatalities, and number of non-motorized serious injuries combined, but still involving a motor vehicle during a calendar year. And now we go to the obituaries. And the first is for Marjorie Matilda Klein, 95, of Tampa, Florida, who died on December 17, 2019. She was born in Tilton, Illinois. A memorial service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, January the 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street. Officiating will be Pastor James Blue. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation hour will be just prior to the service from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. And the next is for John Henson Wright, 56, of Covington, Indiana, who died on December 29, 2019. Visitation will be at 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. Sunday, January 12th, with cremation memorial service to follow at 1:30 p.m. Service will be officiated by Nick Ford, a family friend. Veterans Chapel Building 49, VA Ileana Healthcare System, 1900 East Main Street, Danville, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to help cover medical expenses. And the next is for Alice L. Simpson, 79, of Taylorville, Illinois, who died on Monday, January the 6th. Visitation and funeral ceremony is on Saturday from 10 a.m. until the time of ceremony at noon at the First United Methodist Church, 200 United at First United Methodist Church, 200 South Walnut Street, Taylorville, Illinois, 62568, with Pastor Becky Lemke officiating. Interment will follow in the ceremony at Oak Hill Cemetery in Danville. Memorial contributions may be made to First United Methodist Church, 200 South Walnut Street, Taylorville, Illinois, 62568. The next is for Deborah, quote-unquote Debbie Mills, 68, of Terrell, Texas, formerly of Georgetown, Illinois, who died on December 24, 2019. A memorial service will be at 3 p.m. Saturday, January 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Georgetown, 200 East West Street in Georgetown, with Mike Mills officiating. Visitation prior to the service at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in Forest Park Cemetery, Georgetown. And the next is for Ernest Edward Rutledge, 84, formerly of Hoopston, Illinois, who died on Friday, January the 3rd, 2020. No services were listed. And the next is for Carolyn Jackier Etchison, 90, of Tipton, Illinois. I'm sorry, Tipton, Indiana, who died on Monday, January 6th. A funeral mass will be at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Saturday, January 11th, at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church, with Reverend Dennis Goth presiding. Burial will follow in Arcadia Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Friday, at Young Nichols Funeral Home, where a rosary service will begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Memorial contributions in Carolyn's honor may be made to the Building Fund at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church, 355 Mill Street, Tipton, Indiana, or the American Cancer Society, 5635 West 96th Street, Suite 100, Indianapolis, Indiana. And the next is for Nancy Bowden, 71, of Danville, who died on Wednesday, January the 8th. Funeral services are incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Home on Hodge Street in Tilton. And the next is for Kathy L. Breeden, 65, of Chatsworth, who died on Wednesday, January the 8th. A celebration of life gathering will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, January 11th at the Lee Lowry, American Legion Post, number 568 in Gibson City. And the next is for Christine Johnson, 86, of Gifford, who died on January 6th. A private memorial service was held January 7th at Country Health Care and Rehab in Gifford. Her family will be laying her to rest in Floral Hill Cemetery in Hoopston next to her husband. A memorial may be, contributions may be made in her honor to the Alzheimer's Association. And the next is for Keith Brown of Catlin, 84, who died on Thursday, January 9th. Funeral services are incomplete at Robeson Chapel, Douglas Street in Catlin. And the next is for Lois Ellis, 83, of Danville, who died on Wednesday, January the 8th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Kruger Cohen Pape Funeral Home and Crematory on William Street in Danville. And the next is for Sharon Hoag of Fairmount, 79, who died on Wednesday, January the 8th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Robeson Chapel, Douglas Street in Catlin. And the next news article has the headline, Indiana's Salvation Army Honors Covington's Hoagland. Dateline Covington, Indiana. Under Harry Hoagland's direction, the Salvation Army of Fountain County has grown over the years. 7 years ago, the Kettle campaign took in about $300. Last year, the kettles and mailed-in donations hit $20,000. Hoagland, 84, chairman of the advisory council, was honored this week by the State Salvation Army as the 2019 Volunteer of the Year. Billy Kay, Divisional Service Extension Director with the Salvation Army in Indianapolis, told him, "It takes a community, but you were the vessel that made that happen." In all humility, however, Hoagland said, "I don't deserve it. I accept on behalf of the volunteers in Fountain County." The presentation of a certificate and plaque was a total surprise to Hoagland, who planned to conduct an advisory council meeting as scheduled on Tuesday night. Even after Kay announced the honor, Hoagland still wanted to continue the meeting, she said. There are 56 counties in Indiana without a Salvation Army church and 76 units within those counties. Hoagland was competing with those 76 units and was nominated by Nancy Wolf, regional liaison. As a Christian organization, Kay said in a telephone interview, the Salvation Army focuses on the fruits of the Spirit. Referring to Hoagland, she said in her 15 years in her position, "I've never seen anyone with so many fruits of the Spirit. He's gentle, kind, loving, patient, humble, all the things we want to be. He's a very special person. I want to give him the award. He doesn't understand what he does and how important it is." Hoagland said, "They feel that what I'm doing is consistent with the mission of the Salvation Army. That's my motivation, to serve my fellow man in the name of Christ." He was honored by the award and added, "I've never felt so humbled in my life, but it doesn't happen without the people out there in the trenches. They make you look good." 7 years ago, when he joined the board, the Kettle campaign raised about $300, and it rose steadily until it collected more than $11,000 in 2018. Last year, the Advisory Council decided to launch a letter campaign that, along with the Kettles, brought in $20,135. Hoagland commended volunteer Sarah Wheeler for doing a masterful job on making sure all of the Kettle spots were filled. The campaign was 6 days short due to the late Thanksgiving, so he said, "We had some catching up to do." That's where the mail campaign was a big help. He stressed that all the money received by the Salvation Army stays in Fountain County to help people with emergency assistance. The money is designated to go into the hands of people who need it, he said. The Salvation Army expects to serve 250 to 300 people this year, including those in Covington, Petersburg, Wallace, Kingman, and Hillsboro. Attica is in Fountain County, but is part of the Warren County Council. "The Salvation Army is consistent with what I believe," Hoagland said. "How can you love your neighbor in a better way and serve him than what the Salvation Army stands for?" Hoagland said he's had tremendous support from the Advisory Council, made up of 12 to 15 volunteers. "My role is to keep the wheel going and keeping the wheel greased," he said. This year, the council plans to expand its role and services and to take emergency training. Hoagland, who worked in insurance for 45 years, is active in retirement. "I just love Covington and the county," he said. "Instead of sitting back, it's payback time." He is a member of the Mount Hope Cemetery Board, the Fountain County Art Council, and Covington High School Alumni Association, and founder of the school's Wall of Fame. He also mentors students in middle school. And the next article has the headline, "Armed Men Take Delivery Driver's Vehicle." Dateline Danville. A delivery driver was the victim of armed violence Wednesday. Danville police responded at 7:05 p.m. to the 800 block of Harrison Street in reference to a report of a vehicular hijacking of a Pizza Hut delivery driver. According to a press release issued Thursday morning, the victim said she exited the vehicle to make a delivery when she was approached by three black males. She said two of the men were armed with handguns and all three of them got into her vehicle while it was still running. The victim tried to stop the suspects from taking her vehicle, but one of them pointed a handgun at her and threatened her. The suspects then drove away from the scene. A short time later, police located the vehicle unoccupied in an alley near Seminary Street and Bowman Avenue. Further investigation revealed the suspects took the pizza and some of the victim's personal items. Officers checked the area but were unable to locate any of the suspects. No injuries were reported during the incident, and the investigation continues. No other information is being released at this time, the release stated. Anyone with information regarding this event is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. And the next article is a, written by the editors. During escalating pressure ahead of the 2020 presidential election, Facebook reaffirmed its freewheeling policy on political ads Thursday, saying it won't ban them, won't fact-check them, and won't limit how they can be targeted to specific groups of people. Instead, Facebook said it will offer users slightly more control of how many political ads they see and make its online library of political ads easier to browse. These steps appear unlikely to assuage critics, including politicians, activists, tech competitors, and some of the company's own rank-and-file employees, who say that Facebook has too much power and that social media is warping democracy and undermining elections. And Facebook's stance stands in contrast to what its rivals are doing. Google has decided to limit targeting of political ads, while Twitter is banning them outright. Today's announcement is more window dressing around their decision to allow paid misinformation, said Bill Russo, a campaign spokesman for Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. Social media companies have been trying to tackle misinformation since it was learned that Russians bankrolled thousands of fake political ads during the 2010 elections to sow discord among Americans. The fears go beyond foreign interference. In recent months, Facebook, Twitter, and Google refused to remove a misleading video ad from President Donald Trump's campaign that targeted Biden. Facebook has repeatedly insisted that it won't fact-check political ads. CEO Mark Zuckerberg has argued that political speech is important and that Facebook doesn't want to interfere with it. Critics say that stance gives politicians a license to lie. TV stations and networks aren't required to fact-check ads either, but social media gives candidates a certain advantage. The ability to micro-target their ads. For instance, they can use information gleaned from voter rolls, such as political affiliation, and try to reach just those people. Or they can narrow the target audience to those who have shown interest in guns, abortion, or immigration, based on what the user has read or talked about on Facebook. Candidates might even show one ad to young Democratic women interested in both gun control and climate change, and a different ad to everyone else. Google, the digital ads leader, decided in November to limit political ad targeting to just three broad categories: sex, age, and location, such as zip code. And the next is another editorial. And it has the headline, Biden speaks to those on the left. Throughout this unsettling conflict with Iran, Joe Biden has stood out as a calming Democratic voice, speaking of the stakes and challenges with deep knowledge of foreign policy. Just another reason for activists on the left backing Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren to lose their minds. The news for them hasn't been great of late. Biden is now tied with or close to Sanders for first place in Iowa and New Hampshire, according to the most recent reputable poll. Warren polls behind Pete Buttigieg in both places. Sanders and Warren were supposed to triumph in these states, where the Democratic electorate tends toward very liberal white people. Biden also raised nearly $23 million in the fourth quarter, the best haul since he entered the campaign. Sanders and Warren may still win, but with just over 4 weeks before the Iowa caucuses, it doesn't look like these contests will be any kind of romp for either of them. Then comes South Carolina, where a heavily African-American electorate still seems to favor Biden by a large margin. Thus, the attacks from the left flank. A group called Indivisible is now going after Biden's immigration plan for holding that a pathway to citizenship would include an ability to speak English. That doesn't sound wholly unreasonable. Such a requirement was included in the 2013 Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, which Sanders and Warren both voted for. The Progressive Change Campaign Committee is slamming Biden's electability argument. Co-founder Adam Green said that many Democrats are under the mistaken impression that Biden is safe or electable when he's the least electable option we have. Almost every poll contradicts that statement, but if Green says so, PCCC has also accused Biden of giving the impression that electability means old, white, and conservative, according to Politico. Going after white males is sure going to wow the voters in Wisconsin. In his long career, Biden has cast votes that I too wish he hadn't. I especially disliked his stance on bankruptcy reform. But then both Sanders and Warren have taken regrettable votes benefiting economic interests at home. Sanders voted to fund the F-35 fighter jet boondoggle, and Warren led the fight to remove a tax on medical devices, money that helped support the Affordable Care Act. Attaching the label progressive tends to be in the eye of the attacher. I base such judgments on the issue involved. Biden has been very progressive on the fight against global warming. In 1986, when almost no one was talking about this, he introduced a bill ordering the president to set up a tax force on climate change. It was eventually passed and funded. As vice president, Biden was Barack Obama's point man on setting limits on coal plant and tailpipe emissions. He also led the charge in bringing the United States into the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. Biden's current proposal is to spend $1.7 trillion over a decade and slap a tax on greenhouse gases. His goal is to bring carbon emissions to net zero by 2050, matching the European Union's. And so it's not totally clear why progressive environmentalists in the sunrise movement would hassle Biden at campaign events. Are they ignorant of his record? They're obviously working for his political opponents. The group is attached to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her Green New Deal, and the AOC is attached to Sanders. Former Florida Senator Bill Nelson hit the nail in explaining the latest anti-Biden fuselage from the left. This is their last attempt to try to derail the Energizer Bunny, and they can't figure out why they can't stop it, Nelson told Politico. So they're throwing the kitchen sink at him. That's from a Herald. And now an article with the headline, Methodist Proposed Split in Church. Dateline Nashville, Tennessee. United Methodist Church leaders from around the world and across ideological divides unveiled a plan January 3rd for a new conservative denomination that would split from the church in an attempt to resolve a decades-long dispute over gay marriage and gay clergy. The proposal, called a Protocol of Reconciliation and Grace Through Separation, envisions an amicable separation in which conservative churches forming a new denomination would retain their assets. The new denomination also would receive $25 million. The proposal was signed in December by a 16-member panel who worked with a mediator and began meeting in October. The panel was formed after it became clear the impasse over LGBTQ issues was irreconcilable. The next step could come at the church's general conference in May. Methodist Bishop Karen Oliveto, the denomination's first openly gay bishop, said the United Methodist Church leadership was clearly at a point in which we couldn't agree or disagree over same-sex relationships. I'm actually really sad that we couldn't build a bridge that could have provided a witness to the world of what unity amid diversity and disagreement could look like. Oliveto was challenged by the denomination's highest court, the Judicial Council, in 2017. When it declared that the bishop's consecration was incompatible with church law. However, Oliveto was allowed to remain as the resident bishop of the Mountain Sky Conference, which includes United Methodist churches in Colorado, Mountain, and Utah, and Wyoming, and a section of Idaho. Asked what the post-separation world looks like for the church to move forward, Oliveto said, "We are no longer using LGBTQ people as scapegoats. Members of the 13 million person denomination have been at odds for years over the issue, with members in the United States leading the call for full inclusion of LGBTQ people." This has been Lois Pausch reading the Bermingham County News for Friday, January the 10th, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again next week.